Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub. I have the privilege and honor of talking with, here we go, Mario Lanzarotti. He's giving me the thumbs up. It's all this okay sign. It's beautiful. I love the name, Mario Lanzarotti. I never usually have the chance to do the little accents and stuff, but he is a high-performance coach. He's a TEDx speaker, a conscious leader, which is the one that really attracted me to him because it's conscious communication and the conscious leader. I love that. And he helps you build your own unstoppable mindset. We're going to get into all this stuff. First question I want to ask you, what was your serendipity? What was your coincidence, your accident in life that occurred to you? Because you didn't wake up one morning going, I think I'm going to be a high-performance coach and a TEDx speaker and a conscious, that, you know, it didn't slip on. What was that serendipity, that coincidence in your life that pulled you in this direction? And I know there could be several, but what comes to mind that really changed that going, I'm going down this road?
What a beautiful question. Thank you, Philip. And that the answer is my moment of divine intervention, as I like to call it, was when I hit rock bottom and I was contemplating suicide for about 2 weeks. I was in the Lufthansa Flight Training Academy in Germany. I was about to become a pilot. And my whole life was swirling downwards. I was in chronic debilitating back pain every single day. I hated my life. I hated myself. And I was so ashamed of myself. And I was bottling it all up because in my mind, I was like, the worst thing that you can do now is tell people that you're struggling so much, because then you're going to be labeled as a failure and that will stick for life. And so I don't know what I typed in, but I typed in something, and this was what, 12 years ago, into YouTube. And here comes Tony Robbins and Les Brown. And I'd never, ever seen anything like that in my whole life. It was the first thought that popped up. You know, I was born and raised in Germany, so these things were totally foreign. It was like a scam artist. Click, you know, just go. But there was another voice that said, listen, just listen. And I did listen. And that was my safety anchor. That was what saved my life, because I consumed this content from Les Brown and Tony Robbins rigorously every single day while I was at rock bottom. And at some point, I felt an internal shift. And I went from, I am the biggest failure of my life, to this could be the greatest start to a new adventure. And so I decided to open up, quit my career, and restart my life. And at that point, I still remember the day where I was so filled with gratitude for what I had received from two men that I didn't even know, that I was like, one day, I too will help people free themselves from the thoughts and feelings that are holding them back in life. I didn't know when, I didn't know how, but I held on to this. And 7 years later, I signed my first coaching client.
Okay, stop. So I would stop you right now. So I'm just going to address the conscious communication audience. Did you hear what he said? It was down and out, a lot of stuff going on, bad stuff. And suddenly some divine intervention, something happened where he's on YouTube. It's Les Brown. I love Les Brown. And Tony Robbins, there's a gentleman named Bob Proctor. There's all sorts of different people out there that are just so inspirational. And Les Brown is, anybody in the audience who hasn't listened to Les Brown, he sweats the minute he says hello. And he's just amazing. And I've listened to him for several years. And I'm reading positive books all the time. But just for the audience to hear that, it was down and out. He didn't know where to go. He was afraid of stuff. And then suddenly something happened, which changed his life. And you don't know where that is. You don't know what happened. And you're like, boom, I clicked on, like, it gave you that feeling, that energy, that what I call serendipity and coincidence that you needed, because you got to find it in yourself. I can't tell you. You can read all you want, but you got to find it from within. So that is a fantastic story, because we've all had to deal with different things in our lives, and you don't know what things happen and why you go through things. When you were going through that, and after you got your divine intervention, your coincidence, and suddenly it occurred to you and started working it out. And again, this didn't happen overnight, because I hate, and you're right. You listen to people like, oh yeah, I can make you successful. In 6 months, you'll make, you know, $9 million. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. When you did that, when you saw that, did you start realizing the different things that you went through, how you learned from what you went through when you were at the bottom of the barrel? What, how did that, you know, come up and have resolution to that and then carry that into something of positivity and what you're doing now?
Yeah. So I think it started with me learning about the ability that the mind has to look at a situation from a new perspective. For me, it wasn't even a thing. Like, as I said, I grew up in Germany, that I had no idea what that mindset is. That to me, that was so foreign, that idea. And I was like, wait, there's another perspective? There's another way of looking at this thing? It's not just I am the ultimate failure for life and that's the only way. It's like, there's other ways? Really? Wow. So I started applying that. And I started looking at my own situation, not, as I said, as the end of the road, but as the beginning of something new, as a way to also take my story. Because I was like, wait, there are two guys that are living in the US. Both of them come from, you know, next to nothing, have surmounted crazy obstacles and challenges. And here I am living in a good off middle class family that with everything that I possibly need, with friends, with a girlfriend, everything that you want. And here I am telling myself that my life is over. It's like, come on, dude. It's like, there's so much more inside of you. And so it created that initial momentum. It got me out of this place of thinking, this is it. This is the end. And so I started looking at myself, not from a perspective of I'm being punished, but I'm being given an opportunity. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, something can change. And I asked myself, you know, what is it that I'm so afraid of? And the biggest thing that I was afraid of by far was being judged, being labeled a failure. And I was. Some people actually labeled me a failure. They talked about me online because becoming a pilot in Germany for Lufthansa, Philip, is like going to NASA in the US. It's a major thing. So when I quit, people were like, what? How can you do that? Oh my God. And so I used that as like as sort of fodder, as like fuel. I was like, okay, I'm going to make something out of it. I'm going to turn this into a success story that can help other people, just like Tony Robbins and Les Brown's story helped me. And from there, you know, I started applying tools for myself. But it was really, really hard in the beginning because almost nobody understood me. They were all like, dude, you're throwing away the golden opportunity of a lifetime. Did you smoke crack? And I'm like, you don't understand what this is all about. And so people, yeah, you just gave up too soon and, you know, all of that stuff. But I was like, I don't care, because there are people out there that have impacted millions, have made millions, are happy, healthy. They look better than any human being that I've ever met in my life. So I think I'm going to start listening to them.
Yeah.
And then my life changed.
That, Les Brown, one of his talks said something, I'm paraphrasing it, that his mother said, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to become a speaker, because, you know, he was adopted, you know, the whole story. And it's like, his mother goes, what is that? It's like, I'm going to help people be positive. Well, you're going to be a preacher? No, I'm just going to help people find their way. And she goes, he didn't know how to do it. He didn't know how to do it. And he believed, he had faith. And he saw something in himself that he loved. And he passed on something to somebody else. I always say empowering others empowers ourselves. And when you do these stories, like you're saying, it just touches me, because we all go through stuff. And, you know, it's funny. It's not funny as in ha-ha, but interesting more than would be the right word. It's like, you're looking at your life and you're like, I come from a good family, got food on the table. What am I feeling so bad about? And, you know, and then you hear about Les Brown's story and then Tony Robbins and all these other people, a gentleman named Bob Proctor out of Canada. And he, there's all sorts of people like this. And you find out their stories, it's like, they made it, but it took time. And that's something that's very important to be able to focus on. So the other one is, aluminium. I just marked a note down here. I got confused. My own notes. I'm sorry. So Bob Proctor, and there's somebody called Elizabeth Town, T-O-W-N-E. She wrote a book in 1906. And she was in those days, she was like huge in inspirational talk, and there was no internet. There was nothing. And they made their name here in the US, and I'm reading all about this. There's so many people, Alan Watts. There's so many people you could get turned on to, that not just videos, but writings and audiobooks that are so positive to keep you going. So how do you bring out an individual's own self-awareness of who they are to get in touch with their purpose on their true purpose on planet Earth? How do you get into there? Because we talked about this before I hit record. You can't make somebody do something they don't want to do. You could just give them the tools, the process, the procedures that you've worked out in your business to be able to say, this is what works for me. Now you've got to adapt it. But how do you try to bring out that awareness in themselves? Because their inner knowing knows. How do you find that for them? How do you help them?
Great question. And I will say what comes to mind for me right now is the body knows the truth. So when I work with people in a group setting, a one-on-one setting, and they say to me, and I ask them, how are you? And they're like, yeah, good. I was like, why did you do this? I was like, why did you raise your shoulders? And they're like, I don't know. It's just what I do. It's like, really? I was like, and so we dig deeper, right? Or when I ask them, how do you feel, how do you feel about the progress that you're currently making? They're like, yeah. You know, they look down. Yeah, that's all right. So I know your body is telling me that you are ashamed. Because your body language is telling me that there's shame. And it's like, what are you ashamed about? And then they start thinking, what do you mean? I'm ashamed? Wait, what? And then like thinking, oh, yeah, you're right. Huh. It's like, well, what is it that you're feeling right now? It's like, I'm feeling behind. It's like, behind what? Behind the door? It's like, no, behind my goals. It's like, oh, that's interesting. So we, through language is a wonderful tool because here's the thing. One of my quotes I like to say to people is, you can only be as free as your current reality allows you to be.
Say it again.
You can only be as free as your current reality allows you to be.
I love that.
So now, let's unpack that. Okay, what does that even mean, right? Reality. What creates your reality? Most people say, I don't know, it's just the way that it is. Really, is it? Well, let's take a look at language. See, two people, one person can say, oh, I want to do X, Y, and Z. The other person will say, I should do X, Y, and Z. Radically different realities. The one person comes from a place of true desire. The other one comes from guilt because they say, I should do something, which is a conditioned response, which is a voice that is from usually your parents, your teachers, even the book that you read from some e-commerce guru that says, oh, you should be sending 1,000 cold emails every single day. And then you were like, I don't like cold emails, but I should be doing that. So now you feel guilty about the fact that you're not sending cold emails, which means now you create inner conflict. So again, two different realities. And they are different because of the language that we use. Language creates your reality. In the beginning was the word. Without language, there's no reality to perceive. And so the first place where I always lead people is listen to your own language and look at your own body. It will tell you a story that you might not even be ready to see. But when you are, I promise you, my friend, everything will start to make sense. Everything. We can go a little bit deeper.
Please.
One of the patterns, right, that I have and that a lot of my clients have is this savior pattern. It's like, I'm going to change the world. Why do you need to change the world? What are you saying about the world that if you're saying that you need to change it? Well, you're saying that the world is wrong. Oh, are you God? Are you the universe? Are you the mighty know-it-all? Are you? Well, no, really. But then why do you think the world needs to change? So there's this savior pattern that we have that often comes from a place in childhood when children grow up in an emotionally unstable environment where they have to take up a role to sort of comfort the parents. And, you know, it goes a little deeper, but for simplicity's sake, there's the savior pattern, right? So when you have the savior pattern, what do you look to be? You look to be the hero, right? Mm. When you look to be the hero, you naturally take on narcissist tendencies. That doesn't mean that you are a narcissist, but there are tendencies. I myself have. I can own that. That's okay. But like you often find the hero and the enemy, which means for the rest of your life, you are fighting a battle. Because if you're not fighting a battle, you can't be the hero. And if you can't be the hero, you can't be the savior. And if you can't be the savior,
you're done.
Then you feel absolutely lost because then you cannot get any love. So All of that is created through a narrative that is playing unconsciously in your own mind. And you just look at the way, the world that you look at through that perception, and you think, oh, that's just the way that I am. You know, that's just the way the world is, you know. One of the words, you know, one of my clients, he used to say to me, I mean, of course it's stressful. Of course it's going to be stressful. I'm like, it's like, you're very certain that future events are going to be stressful. Why are you so certain?
Then it's going to be.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
So this is how we create our own future. Well, this is what we call a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's going to be so stressful. I'm going to have to catch the flight. Then I'm going to have to give the talk. I'm going to have to talk to my business partners. Then I'm going to have to do that. You have to do all those things? Who says that you have to do them? If you don't do them, is someone going to call and kill you? No. But you create a narrative where you are sort of the slave of your own life. I have to do this. I have to do... No, you don't. You choose. You choose. It's your choice. Own that choice. Stop playing the victim in your own narrative. Oh, I have to do this. Oh, no, you don't. You can walk away. You can walk away today, this moment, into the woods, start a new life, start a new identity. I'm not saying it's the ideal way to do that stuff. I wouldn't do it, right?
Right.
But on the fact that your reality is what you created through the use of your language.
Well, one of the things that, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that came to mind, and I can't mark enough notes, but we really depend on, and if you, one of the examples I give is, if you do something to me, whether it's good or bad, unintentionally or intentionally, and I react to you, you're now in charge of me.
Bam.
And
yes.
I did this to one of my students, and he's like, say that again. And I was like, well, again, you're letting the outside world dictate to what you're saying, what your limitations are, and what you can or cannot do. So you go by those limitations, and before the internet, people went to the library. There was always something you could go to. Rented a DVD, went to a speaker thing, and they will say, I've got the answer for you. Well, it's like anything in life, there's one size does not fit all. And you have to delve in because somebody, what you were experiencing in your mind and the way you were perceiving your reality is not the same way it's similar, but in a different manner. And you can't, it's like I used to have, I was in the medical field and there was this antibiotic you would take for 7 days instead of 14 days. It worked for me. A friend of mine got deathly ill and couldn't take it anymore. He goes, I don't understand why that's happening. I told her, I said, because one size does not fit all. Just take the 14-day. It's a kind of a simple example, but the point is, you not one size fits all, and trying to find out and going by why somebody else, like you're saying, everybody else is telling you to do this. If I'm not going to be the savior, I'm not going to do this, because you whittled it all down. You're now the savior and the healer, and if you're not going to be the healer, then you're going to, by the time you're back at the beginning. It's like the dog chasing its tail. You might catch the tail once in a while, but you're so exhausted and burned out, you don't want to get up and do it again. And if you do, you start it all over again. And yes, we're looking for answers. And you, Delvin, like I'm doing, we're doing it, and you're delving into somebody's mind going, you have the answer. Let me help you bring that out for you. And I love the idea of watching the shoulders and the facial expression, because we're not noticing it. When we're inside it, you're not, it's nothing wrong with me. I don't know what you're talking about. I put my shoe on the left foot first or my right. I can't change it from the right to the left. If I do that, that's a habit and routine. You can change it. Like you said, anytime you want. I want to turn this podcast off and I want to go into the forest and just live there for the rest of my life in a tent and just chant all the way. That's my choice. And you're hurting yourself. And you're talking about the physical stuff. So how do you... I know the way I think about it, but I want to see how you think about this, because I want to learn something. I don't learn anything by talking. I learn from listening. You know, the mind is a reflection. The body's a reflection of your mind. And people go, well, you're saying that I don't feel well. I have an ache in my arm because of the way I think. I go, well, for me, when I start feeling, I know very well what happens in my body. My stomach starts gurgling. I start having indigestion problems. My eye starts getting, we all have these weird things that go on, but it's our body telling us something's going on here. I know it's not all the time. Sometimes people really do get sick from some illness, and I'm not saying that, but I think the majority of the time, the more I keep reading, 60 or 70% of the illnesses are coming from our minds, and we're looking for the outside world to solve them. How do you, when you read somebody, you see somebody and they're expressing themselves, more one-on-one. It's kind of hard to do it in a group setting, but you probably notice it also. How do you kind of make them aware so they going, you know, you're causing that by having, I call them energy suckers. You've got to surround yourself with people of positivity. If not, there are people that just want to bring you down. They want to suck the energy out of you because they feel better with the negativity. You can't, what was that one story? I can't remember the speaker's name. Oh, Michael Wickett. And he was saying that in the 1970s when he was saying, you know what? He went to this friend every week with breakfast. And every time they would talk about success and what they're going to do. So they was taking these positive seminars from Zig Ziglar and all these other people. And he said, you know what? I discovered what I want to do. I want to be a positivity coach and whatever. And he said, well, I warn you. And this is a guy he was going to lunch with, or I'm sorry, breakfast for years, talking about the future. He said, what do you mean? Why, what's wrong? He goes, well, you've never written a book and you didn't have 3 degrees. You don't have a PhD. You don't have this. And he's like, started feeling, because he was really feeling positive of himself. And it's like, well, thank you for sharing, but I'm going to go ahead and do that. He didn't say anything negative about the gentleman, but he said he never went to breakfast with him again. So you have to surround yourself with people because you don't want to be out in the world struggling and then come back home. And then that person's doing it to you also. You've got to have people. You've got to have mentors in your life because you only have that energy that goes so far. And then somebody comes in your life and like, hey, let's have a discussion, see what happens. So when you see that happening, is what kind of stories or antidotes or different things that you've seen for yourself that were like, you know, it took you 7 years to get to where you're at and you slowly built it up because you had those inspirations, those coincidences. Along the way, did you know you came to a point where there's like a glass ceiling, like, oh, where do I go from here? And then you go to the next one, it's a glass ceiling. How did you have that belief and that faith that you knew that you were going to get the answer, but you didn't know how?
Great question. So to your point, I think your environment is the number one factor that contributes to the way that you think, feel, and act, by far. Because human beings have something called mirror neurons. That's how we learn when we're infants, right? And that's, which is also the interesting thing. If you see a parent that smokes in front of their children and says, don't smoke, don't do what mommy does or daddy, you know, this is a bad, you know, and then you look at the child emulates the behavior because the child doesn't listen to your words. The child looks at what are you embodying. This is how we learn. This is a natural process of learning. So with that in mind, environment isn't just who do you hang out physically. It's also who do you hang out virtually, like in your online space. Who do you follow on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn? Who do you listen to in a podcast? Like, what kind of music do you listen to? Like, the more conscious I have become, the less I can tolerate rap music. I can't. I can't listen to it anymore. When I hear, like, you know, all the words about women, about men, about all of that stuff, sometimes the beat is still cool. I like to dance with it. But as soon as the lyrics come, I'm out. Right? And the same goes for what you read and for what you watch, all of it, right? So it plays a monumental role. And I think the one thing that I did so well for me in hindsight is I went all in. I mean, it was to the degree I listened to Tony Robbins from morning till night. This is how I learned to coach people. I became like a mini Tony Robbins. Many years ago, like three, four years ago, we went to London, my fiance and I, we went to Unleash the Power Within Tony Robbins. And Tony Robbins was on stage and he was telling one of his stories that he's told a gazillion times. He's telling the story and I'm sitting in the audience and I kid you not, I am reciting word for word what's coming out. And my fiance just looks at me, just like, oh my God, you're such a nerd. And people around me start noticing and they start laughing. And I'm like, I know this stuff because I've listened to it over and over and over and over again while working out, while walking this in the subway, going shopping all the time. I flooded my mind, which is why I've also often outgrown people. And I don't say this from a perspective of I am better than them or where I am is better than where they are. Simply, I've just moved onto a different path and they often have stayed stuck where they are. And so because of that, I have had a deep hunger to surround myself with people that can guide me and mentor me. And I've often just showed up and asked, what can I do? How can I? Like, I went to New York as a student. I've never been in New York before in my life. I was there by myself, essentially, a couple of my other fellow students. And I met this founder of a startup called All in Sundry, was the startup, custom shoe brand. And I approached him. He's like, hey, dude, are you looking for some interns? I need to do an internship. He's like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, but here's the catch. I will only intern for you if you give me the chance to become your business partner if I prove myself. And he's like, okay, young man, you've got balls. Let's see if you...
I like it.
If there's something behind your words. I was like, yeah, of course. And I worked my ass off. I was there for free, pretty much worked for almost a year. No guarantees, no contract, just a handshake. And he made me his business partner. And I got, you know, I would share some in the company. And we ended up selling the company 4.5 years later. But it was because I showed up. I was there. I was humble. I asked, what can I do? Can you take me to this meeting? Can you explain how you do this to me? So I've always had this. And as soon as I got money, a little bit of money, I started investing in seminars. I went to seminars. I went to see Les Brown one of the first year that I went to New York. I was sitting in the audience with my big book, Les Brown's book. He comes walking down the stage. He walks towards me. I was there with my girlfriend at the time. She's like, oh my God, Mario, look, he's coming. He's coming to us. I'm like, oh God, oh God. And I'm like, starstruck. Oh God. And he comes down to me and he says, hello, who are you? And where are you from? He's like, hi, I'm Mario. He's like, oh, I'm from Germany. He's like, wait. And he goes, wait, you're telling me you came to see me from Germany? And I didn't know what to say. I said, yes. He's like, oh, everybody. It's like thousands of people. Here's Mario. That's a dedicated man. He comes from Germany just to see this. This is what we need. And I'm like, sure. Okay. But I did this stuff, you know, like I just went for it. And I ended up going to other coaching seminars. And I studied the coaches. I studied the speakers. I was on them. I looked at their body language. I analyzed their words. Yes. I had the conversations. I listened to it 20, 30, 40, 50 times until it was in me. And that programmed my mind so radically away from everything that I was used to. And once I was there, I then started to become very selective with who I spent time with. And that meant, you know, when some people said to me, hey, you want to come hang out? You want to go to this bar? I'm like, no.
Nope.
No. You see, in the beginning, Philip, what's going to get you the most growth is to say yes to almost everything, right?
Right.
You just got to go out there, try things out, you know, try. But once you get to a point where you found sort of your own niche, what you love, you know, the ikigai kind of thing, at that point, what's going to get you to the next level and the next level and the next level is a sacred no. You got to say no. No, you have to say no way more than you say yes. Because the way that I look at it, God, life, the universe wants to test you.
Yeah.
How bad do you really want this?
Yes.
Do you really want to be a leader of the world who inspires people? Do you really want to be someone that changes the policy in this entire corporation? Do you really want to do this? All right, let me test you. Here's a challenge. Here's another one. And 99% of the people out there will say, oh, I tried, and they'll give up, right? And for me, that was no option. I was like, this is it. This is it. This is my thing that I will do in life, and I will do it no matter what. And I told my fiance, I said, look, I don't know at what time I'm going to make enough money for us to have a really nice lifestyle. I don't know. I can't guarantee it to you. I just know that it will happen.
Right.
Are you okay with me playing this game for however long? Are you with me? Are you by my side? She said, absolutely. I said, that's all I need to know. Let's go.
And that's what you need. There's a gentleman... his name was Earl Nightingale. And a quote from him is you become what you think about.
Yes.
And you become what you feel and think about and see and around you. And I learned, you know, you think you know everything. And I say that those that claim to be the wise men are sure the fool. I don't know everything. There's no way I can. It's impossible. My grandma, who lived to 99, said, the last time you stop learning is when you're 6 feet under the ground. And in one of my lectures, I said, I'm a master of nothing. I'm a practicer because I'm not master. If I said master, that means I'm never growing. I'm not changing. Of course, I'm what I believe in and what I do in my philosophy, it's always changing. And I found that interesting that you opened up your file cabinet, took all the files out, threw them in the, shredded them, just got rid of them and just empty files. And you just kept dumping the positivity and dumping the positivity and dumping the positivity. And I'm sure you still do that because it's something that I have eliminated, I know it sounds crazy, but I've eliminated all negativity in my life. Anything that's negative from me, I've eliminated, whether it's people or friends or relatives or relatives. You know, most of them are fine, but you limit it. You just limit it. One of the people I was reading about, he said, if it's some relative that's directly associated with you, but you see them every holiday, just see them once a holiday, talk to them for a few minutes, and move on to somebody else at the party and the family gathering. If it's friends, and this is hard, there's two things that are really, really hard to do. Saying no and saying you're done with the relationship with somebody without coming off as self-righteous, egotistical, I'm better than you. And it's a perfectly fine. Those things are protecting you because you don't want to come off that way. And money. That's another thing that people just are very uncomfortable with. But the one with people, I think, is even harder. Because when you have people that are bringing you down, early on, before I was exploring the philosophy, it's taken me a number of years because I came from a corporate world. And I mean, I thought I was going to retire there. And then doors open, doors close. And my wife said, all right, kids are gone. They're all grown up. Just do it now. So if you want to go after your dream, do it. And you were saying with your fiance, you need that person to say, you failed because you tried something like, oh, that didn't work. Oh, that worked really well. And, you know, I have friends, my first student, he went from the beginning of the philosophy to the end before, and he even came to my first lecture. And he said, do you realize how far you've come? And you don't see that in yourself. And this is why you need people to support you, to say these things. I said, what do you mean? I said, I guess I see it. He goes, and he named all these different things. And he started quoting all the stuff I was teaching. And I'm like, you were listening? And I'm like, it makes you feel good because the more I talked about my belief system, my philosophy, the stronger I got. And if I can empower others to empower themselves, that makes me stronger and makes them stronger. Then they go to somebody else and empower somebody else. It's just amazing. And we become what you think about is so true. If you're reading, you're talking about rap. If you're listening to any kind of music that's negative, stop. If you're listening to any kind of news or cruising the internet and saying, oh, look at what's going on in the world. Guess what? For over 2,000 years, man's inhumanity to man has never changed. I go further than 2,000. Go back to like 700 BC, when they were lopping people's heads off, destroying people's whole towns and families. Man's inhumanity, man has never changed. It never will, because it's got to change from the inside out.
Yes.
You can't change. You were talking about, you know, you want to be the savior and change the world. It's a good idea, but it's not going to happen. Who made you God? Who told you you could take what you little bit you have and make a difference in people's lives? Because many times, so when you do your lectures, your presentations, if you have 100 people there, you don't know that one, you'll never know that one person, unless they tell you that you just changed their life because you said, sun, moon, sky, you gave some story that clicked on, just like when you were listening to all this stuff, clicked. I'm like, oh my, wait a minute, I don't have to think this way. I can rewrite, I call them folders. I can rewrite all these folders in my filing cabinet. I can just shred this stuff. I can start all up. Oh, it's okay, fine. If I do that, then I can listen to this and I can listen. There's so many things that are positive to be able to keep you going and create things that are to find out who your inner knowing knows. The name of my philosophy is called Ajnoi. It's called your soul knowledge. And you're finding your soul knowledge, finding out what fires you up. You don't know it, but I go back to that body language and seeing you only can go so far in life. And then you get to that glass ceiling and somebody else is there. And then there's something else there. But you have to be surrounding yourself, like you said, with the people that are positive, people that are supporting you, knowing that you're going to go down. You're going to go down. Oh, you got one up. Oh, then you're going to go down. Then you're going to go. Because eventually, like Les Brown, who was born in an empty building with his twin brother and adopted, he never imagined he would ever be talking to you at a seminar like that in New York. You've heard him. He said, I never could imagine this version of me even existed. You know, so it's the gentleman who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Can't remember his name, Bill?
Friend. Huh?
Jack Canfield.
Thank you. He didn't know. He knew he had some goals. He knew he had some objectives and worked with another gentleman to get the book going and all these different ideas. But he had to go. He had to figure out where to go, what to do. So this is not a coincidence, which I don't believe, since we become what we think about. Talk about and feel. What are some of the keys to be aware of in ourselves to keep it in that positive mindset? There's people's goals in the world, that's all they want to do is bring you down and make you a failure. And not everybody's going to love you. That's a tough one. But how can you keep that positive mindset? How can you keep that to talk about and feel and surround yourself? I know you're saying get rid of people, but is there anything that comes to mind when I say that that could be a suggestion to the audience of going, well, this is not, my relationship's bad, my job is bad, which is always the two number one things, right? That people can relate to. How do you tell somebody to love themselves out of a bad situation or get themselves out of that? Then they can find out who they are.
Yeah. Great, great question. So I would say everything starts with you, because you can only see what you see within yourself. I could never see anything inside of you, Philip, that I'm not seeing in myself. It's impossible, because there's no registry for that, right? So if I feel triggered by somebody in my life that I look at as negative, the only reason that can trigger me is because that person is touching something that I believe to be true within myself. Wayne Dyer once gave a beautiful example. He said, what do you get when you squeeze an orange? Orange juice, right? What do you get when you squeeze a lemon? Lemon juice, right? Everybody knows that. What do you get when you squeeze Mario? Oh, anger, resentment, frustration. Oh, interesting. So you're telling me that's inside him already. Oh, so the first step that anybody needs to take is responsibility. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, and you will enjoy this because it's all about language. Most people out there, especially the ones in personal development, do not understand what it means to take responsibility. Take the word, turn it around. It means the ability to respond. Yet, what do most people do? Oh, it's my fault, I fucked up. You don't take responsibility because now you are reacting. You're punching yourself in the face, which means you are now triggering your fight or flight system, which now means your mind is going into survival mode, which now means your mind will do one thing. It will revert back to past patterns. Why? Because the mind then creates safety. So every time you blame yourself for a certain behavior that you have, or you blame another person for the behavior that they have, you are reinforcing the behavior. You make it stronger because the mind cannot tell the difference between I want and I don't want. That's good, that's bad. The mind only knows, oh, I focus on this, must be important. Let's make it bigger. So it starts with understanding the true meaning of responsibility, which means you got to take loving awareness. You got to take a look at yourself and say, okay, why do I get triggered by what my partner says? Okay, I wonder why. Okay, what is it inside? Okay, so she says, I'm lazy. Why does that trigger me? Why does the idea that I am lazy trigger me? Oh, because then I tell myself I'm useless. Oh, where does that come from? Oh, that one time when I was in school, when I raised my hand and then the teacher said, what's 2 + 2? And I said, oh, it's 6. And then everybody laughed and I was frozen in that moment. And at that point, I stopped believing in myself and I told myself that it's everybody else's fault because they laughed at me. But really, if I'm really honest, I told myself that I should have been stronger in the moment. And from that moment onwards, I've been so mean and hard on myself. Oh, wow. See, that's taking responsibility. Because when you dissect it and you step back with loving awareness, you find the origin. And when you find the origin of what created the patterns that you are now experiencing, you go in with two tools, forgiveness and acceptance. Mm-hmm. You forgive what happened. You forgive what you did, what you think you did wrong. And you forgive what other people did, what you think was wrong. And when you do that, guess what? Your mind feels now safe enough to let go of what happened in the past, which means it will no longer recreate this kind of event in the future, self-sabotaging patterns, right? So how many people have go from one same relationship to the next one? It never changes. It's because you are still blaming yourself for what happened in the past. And so that is the number one thing that people got to do. Take inventory. take responsibility with loving awareness. Do not judge. Take a look. Be curious. Once you find what happened is forgive and accept. And I think if you do those two things, Philip, you're going to make quantum leaps forward in your life.
Wonderfully said. Wonderfully said. And one of the things that I marked down when you were talking is unforgiveness is worse than forgiveness. Living in unforgiveness, you know, you don't know, you have to change yourself. And one of the things, another one that came to mind was when I started building what I'm doing, you know, because it didn't happen overnight, right? I realized when I started getting mad, it comes out with, it's like puking up noisy crap that means I'm like, bleh, something. And my wife just happens to be there. But she made me aware, she made a comment, you know, do you realize when you're arguing, and we really don't argue and fight, but when I got mad at something stupid, because it's always something stupid, you know, I have nothing to do with that. So she decided, and she told me this a while ago, and then I came up with part of the philosophy of this, like, she's like, I just walk away, I ignore you, because you're trying to suck me into that, trying to, like you're saying, trying to justify the negativity, the stupidity, the action, whatever it is. And I realized, okay, I was like doing what you're doing. Okay, so wait a minute. It's my insecurity or my belief of this, this, and this, because the story doesn't matter. It's always, the stories are different, but it's always the same garbage. And you're right. When you were raising your hand and you said 2 and 2 is 6, that was immediate folder. And you didn't even know it. It wasn't intentional, just it happens. And we don't think we can ever change those things. You can't. You can't because you have to kind of go get to that brick wall.
Exactly.
And you got to battle through it. And another thing that you were mentioning, you've mentioned this a few times now, we get to that point where we know we're ready to succeed, but it's like watering the grass. You know, the seed's starting to come up. You don't see the seed yet. You don't see it. Oh, no, it's going back down. Oh, no, it's going back up. And you go, you know what? This is taking too long. And guess what? The seed dies. And then you never, ever do what you were meant to do. You were never to write, well, Les Brown says that in one of his talks. It's like, I don't remember the gentleman he was quoting from, but the place that where all the dreams are gone is the
graveyard. Yeah,
the graveyard.
Yeah, he talks about the wealthiest place in the world.
Right? That's it. Thank you.
But
thank you. No, go ahead. If you remember the exact quote, I don't.
Yeah, he asks people, "What's the wealthiest place in the world?" And then people go, "Oh, New York, London, Dubai," and he's like, "No, it's the graveyard because that's where people's hopes and dreams die. And all those hopes and dreams could have gone on to, you know, revolutionize the way that we are living, thinking, acting. And yeah, unfortunately, most people take their dreams and hopes to the graveyard. It's a very sad reality."
And it's true. I'm glad you remember the exact story because it's much better where I was going on my bad paraphrasing. But it is true because there was something else that I don't know if he said it or Michael Wickett or some other people that I've gone to events on or read, but you know, those poems died with that person, those plays, those musical, I think it might've been Les Brown. And, yeah. But you know, all the stories, those are the things that were meant for you. Those are your inner knowing. That's your Ajinoy. That's your soul knowledge. Just what your purpose was. And all those things, like you said, in the graveyard. It's not the oil and the money and the big house. It's like, what happens if you had something that even changed one person's life? You touched one person's life that they got out of something negative. And like I said, you have 100 people or 1,000 people listening to you, whatever you've done in your business now, you're not going to always know. Sometimes maybe somebody goes, "Hey, really, thank you. That talk was amazing." Or maybe you get somebody going, "Hey, I want to learn more." Which makes you feel, oh, like, that's great, because now I get to investigate. This is what I learned. I'm assuming that's the same thing for you. Let me know if I'm on the right frequency with this. When somebody accepts something to learn your belief system, your philosophy, you start learning things about yourself, going, oh, I just pointed that out to Mario, and I'm like, oh, that still exists in me. Because it's so deep. And the older you get, we got gazillions and a zillion, bazillion things in our minds. We don't even know where they came from. Like you said, raising your hand to 2 and 2 is 6, and it's really 4, and people laughing at you. These things happen. So that's what I really love about what I'm doing, And I'm sure you are too. It's the same thing. You learn more about yourself than you do about that person, because you're like, you know, did you notice that your arms or what you just said? And suddenly in your mind going, oh crap, I feel the same way. Wow. And then if you share that with somebody in an honest way, in a genuine way, their body language relaxed, because they think, well,
yes,
just because you have this belief, this philosophy, this whole, and I strongly advise everyone to go to his website. He's got a really cool website. It's got some him talking. It's got some good writing, and it's got good stuff. But when you look at that, and you're like, oh, I realize, you know, and it's just so transformational. All the stuff that we can do in our minds, the most powerful thing in the world is our minds. Without our minds, we wouldn't have electricity. We wouldn't have the light bulb. Forget the LEDs. I'm a dorky engineer. LEDs are around 100 years, you know, I'm exaggerating, but a long time ago, because I think I'm older than you. In fact, I know I'm older than you, because I remember putting LED circuits together and lighting them up. Somebody had to invent a microphone that we're talking on. Somebody had to invent a chair because people were sitting on the ground. Somebody said, oh, my pants keep falling. Why don't you put a string around it and call it a belt? So all these things came from the imagination. And when we're young, we're told, stop that. Stop dreaming. Stop it. I'm not knocking school. You got to learn. Yeah. But the mind keeps us safe, but then our imagination was shut off. And you have to extract that imagination back out. However you do that from yourself, it's just sitting there. Because the conscious and subconscious are just mirrors of each other. You got to extract that imagination back, because you have that purpose. I don't know what that purpose is. But like I said, I love talking, because when we're done with this interview, I'm going to notice things in myself, and suddenly I start marking things down. I'm like, and I can bring that to what I talk to people about, and I can bring that to my friends and my family. So we're supposed to be empowering others. We're supposed to empower ourselves, and then empowers each person. Then it keeps moving on and on and on. And I don't mind the electronic communication, but the live thing. We were not meant to not be live. We got to feel that energy. You got to feel that creativity. You know, otherwise, musicals and the new electricity, the microphone, the internet, we've only just begun. Because when somebody says, well, there's no more new things to be invented. No, are you crazy? It's always something new, always something new, always something new. And it's people going, well, I want to be, you know, I want to be everything to everybody. Well, good luck with that. Why don't you be everything to everybody for yourself? And when it'll just shine, and that energy will come out, like you were talking about that company that you partnered with when you were in New York. You didn't know, but you had that passion. Just don't even pay me. Just, you know, you don't want to pay me, fine, whatever. I just want to be an intern. Just let me do this. And if I can prove to you, go for it. And look what happened. You've got to put yourself out there. And I believe those things, those unknown things are telling us to go out there and do something. And you're like, well, you know what? That's too risky. That's too scary. I don't have the right money. I don't have the relationships. I don't have the right job. Well, then change it. Change it. So now, here, I'll go to the next one. Easy is not an option. And I heard that in something that you were on your website. So easy is not an option. This takes time and commitment. You want something in your life. You want to know your ingenue or your passion or whatever word you want to use. It takes time. And see, each person is different. How do you show them, guide them to understand that this takes a lot of practice and commitment? One example, and then I want you to go into that. One of the examples, you might know this story. It's a very old story, kind of a joke. The guy is getting off at LaGuardia, goes down and waves down a taxi driver and gets in the taxi. Goes, hey, what do you want to go? That's my New York accent. I hope you appreciate it. It's really bad. So it goes, well, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? And he looks at him and says, practice, practice, practice. And I love that. It's like there was two musicians in like the 50s that came up with that example. Because somebody's not going to show up to Carnegie Hall or wherever that Carnegie Hall is in the world, wherever everybody lives. He just doesn't come and start playing music. You've got to practice. And this takes commitment. You've got to figure out, oh, my hands are sore or I can't do this anymore. I got to put ice on my hands. I mean, you know, my wife and I just saw an Irish dance show. And I know, because I know some dancers. I mean, they're soaking in cold ice for an hour after they're doing this because it's so much pressure on them. But they're smiling the entire time when they're doing this because that's their passion, their love. So how do you tell somebody, how do you instruct them to be aware that this takes practice and commitment? This is going to take time and you're going to have failures. But again, I don't view them as failures. I view those as, what am I supposed to get out of this? What am I supposed to learn? So how do you see that? How do you guide them in that direction?
So there's a beautiful story, a little story by, I don't know who said it, anonymous.
Okay.
Somebody can find it out and quote it. But it goes like this. So a student and a master walk along a path in the woods, and the student asks the master, say, master, how do I become enlightened like you? I want to be enlightened. And he's like, chop wood and carry water. And he's like, okay, great. So he goes off, he chops wood, he carries water, he chops wood, he carries water, he chops wood, he carries water. And so he reaches a higher state of enlightenment. He gets excited. He's like, talks to the master, and he asks the master, so I understand the path. And he's like, but once I get there, then what? Tell me. Well, how does life change? Right? What's then? And he's like, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. You continue. And so the moral of the story is, see, if you want enlightenment, if you want the good life, if you want to live a fully expressed and realized life, it has to become your lifestyle. You have to embody this. This is the reason, Philip, why I do what I do. Because I understood, and at some point I understood how the mind works and how the body works and how I put myself into a position where I was ready to commit suicide. And I was like, I will never, ever, ever go back there. And the way that I'm going to have my own insurance is I'm going to become the living and breathing example of these teachings. And so when you want change in your life, when you want any significantly better kind of experience or results in your life, money, relationships, health, sex, you name it, whatever that is, right? You have to be that. Because when you embody that, and when you understand that there is no end goal, there isn't. There really is no end goal. It's a way of living. Then you ease into the process. Then it becomes fun. Then it's no longer all about suffering and hardship. You might still have hardship and suffering there as an experience, but it will be momentarily. Like now I can tell you, Philip, I've done so much personal development in my life that now when I go through things, I go through them like this, like a day, 2 days maximum. Before, that stuff used to take me months, years. Why? Because now it's part of my being. See, we have to understand how behavior is created. And behavior is created through one root, and that is identity. Right? Like going back to an earlier point, if I was to say to you, oh, Philip, you look like a fat Asian woman with long hair. You're laughing, right?
Right.
Why? Because within you, there's nothing touches. I don't touch anything. It's a joke. It's like, fun. But if I know some sort of your trigger, right, that's something that you feel insecure about, and I say that, all of a sudden it touches you because it touches your identity. So the kind of work that I do goes to a level of identity. We change who you are, because when we change who you are, guess what? It naturally changes your behavior. It's not a forced thing. It's not like, oh, I'm going to get up in the morning, 6 a.m. Oh, fuck, man, this is so hard, man. No, it's like, yeah, it's natural. It's like, I love doing this. You know, people ask me, I work a lot. But I don't work a lot because I have to work a lot. Like, I'm at a stage where I get clients, referrals to my presentations and presences that it comes naturally. But I absolutely love this. Like, if I sit on a beach for too long, and there are some of the most pristine beaches in the world here in South Africa, I get bored. I'm like, okay, nice.
Now what?
Talk these conversations. It's now 7:30 p.m. I could go on to 1, 2 a.m. I love this stuff because it's who I am. It's who I created myself to be. And so with that, everything in life becomes just a matter of time, not a matter of, is it going to happen or not? No, it will happen because it's who you are. That's where change happens.
That I got nothing to add to that. That was amazing because it is true. When you embody it, it's a bowl of soup, you know, and you want to embody positivity and optimism and possibilities as opposed to sitting in a bowl of soup of negativity and I can't, I can't, I can't, I can't, I can't. And one of the things I thought of when you were saying that is I tell my wife this. I don't like that version of myself, and I walk out of the room. Now, see, the thing is that people need to understand that just because we're spewing out all this positivity doesn't mean we're stupid morons. We are stupid morons, and we still get those things popping up. But the difference is, like you said, instead of lasting months or just, you know, not facing up to it and it just stays there forever, you have the processes and procedures to go through it. And however you ask the questions or however you do it, it works. And it cut 1 or 2 days. You know, one of the things I want to ask you also is, in the what I believe in the philosophy is one of the most important things in life, more than eating, is sleeping. And the reason why I say that is because if you go to bed looking at something negative, reading something negative, arguing with some, you name it, fill in the blank, and you go to sleep, you're in a soup, a bowl of soup of negative garbage. And you wake up in the morning, you don't want to get up. Your aches and pains, you don't even want to open your eyes. You don't want to do anything. And it goes on the whole day and you start all over again. How do you feel about first silence? Just silence by yourself, not with your spouse, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, whatever it is, just silence by yourself. And I call it meditation, but whatever it is, time for yourself to analyze and, you know, see what's going on with you. And then being aware that sleep is, don't go to bed because you're exhausted. Go to bed because you're thinking, okay, it's time to resolve something. I always view sleep as it's time for resolution. And I ask the spirits and I ask the guides and I ask everything else to me in my world and my belief system, okay, I need help. So I pray and meditate 3 times a day. And in the evening, sometimes it goes on for 45 minutes. And I go up to bed and I'm like, and it might not come to me immediately in the morning, but suddenly you're marking down something you're doing. I'm like, oh, I got my answer. So how much do you use in what you, how much importance do you put on silence and inner reflection, self-reflection, and sleep? How do you view that stuff?
Gold. That's a gold mine. So silence, let's start with silence. Silence is so vital. We talked about awareness earlier. We live in a hyper-sensitized, informationally overloaded world. So there is a constant stream of information, of data flowing everywhere you go, which is why you never see enlightened people in crowded cities, right? They're always going to the mountains. But
true.
It's just as a side note, right?
Yes.
But if you have no silence, how will you ever be able to listen to yourself? How? It's impossible. You cannot listen to the thoughts and the feelings. You know, when I say listen, I also mean feel into your body. Right? It's impossible. So silence is the first step. You got to slow down. You got to take an inventory. Like, what's that thought pattern that keeps popping up every time I think about making that $50,000 proposal, or every time I think about taking 2 weeks off from my business and that there's a screaming voice that says, no, if you do that, everything's going to fall apart. You don't even hear that. So silence is crucial. And I can tell you this, Philip, and you probably know this as well. It's like, most people are shit scared of silence.
Yes.
They are so scared because there's a part of them that knows if I sit down in silence, I got to make a change because then I will start to hear the voices and they will become too loud for me not to listen. So silence, first step. Sleep. Oh, I've had a client who came to me. You know, he's a very, very public facing entrepreneur and influencer. And he was like, yeah, I sleep 3 to 4 hours. And I'm like, dude, what? He's like, yeah, 3 to 4 hours is perfectly enough. I'm like, bro, he's like, you're burning out. He's like, you're, and what I do sometimes to push, I need to push people because they're like, yeah, come on. I was like, no, you're a slave. You talk about freedom on your social media, you are a slave. And he got mad. He's like, what? No, it's like, oh, no, I look at my life. Like, no, you're a slave, bro. It's like, you can't even give yourself more than 3 to 4 hours per sleep per night. That to me isn't a free human being. That's a slave. And you celebrate that. It's like, how does that feel? And eventually we got further down, right? But you got to take a heart reality check. Because if you are not getting at least 6 to 8 hours within that window, you know, people are different. Some people need less. Some people need more. I go for 7 to 8 hours pretty much every night. And if I don't, which happens very rarely now, I take more time to meditate throughout the day then. And What I will say about meditation as well, meditation, again, is not a destination, it's a tool. See, the ideal is the more you meditate, the more your life becomes a meditation.
When you go watch... Say that, wait, stop, say it again.
The more you meditate, the more your life becomes a meditation.
I love that.
When you're face-to-face with people, you take deep belly breaths. You look them in the eyes. You're present. You don't judge whatever comes up. You can even communicate what comes up. You know, I've had the most profound conversations with people where I'm like, you know what's coming up for me right now, Philip? In the back of my mind, there's a story that comes up that says, you're judging me because I'm not yet successful enough. I've said that too. Actually, here's a story. Before I tripled my coaching business, before I did that, I was still am part of a very highly influential network of entrepreneurs and businesses all over the world. And I would meet up on Zoom with these big-ass entrepreneurs, and I would feel so small and tiny. Yet I could hear all of their limitations. And my mind was like, dude, just give him a breakthrough. Just sit, tell him that. Just do that. And I was like, no, I can't. He's a 7-8-figure entrepreneur. I'm not. Oh, my God. No, don't do it. And at some point, my coach called me out and said, dude, just try it out. I said, okay. So I said, can I offer you something? He said, please. And I offered it. And the guy broke down in tears in front of me. And he kept telling everybody else. And all of a sudden, all these clients, and I doubling, tripling, quadrupling my prices. Why? Because I listened. I listened to what's inside of me, and I gave myself permission to speak it, right? So listening is so important. And for that, you need silence. And I will say that another thing that revolutionized my life is time in nature. Like, I have done a lot of plant medicine, different psychedelics, ayahuasca, mushrooms, San Pedro, DMT. And I used to be a hardcore atheist. I was like, if you were to tell me that there's anything other than me, I was like, no, I'll debate you into the ground. I'll make you this small, because that's how I felt on the inside. Then I did ayahuasca and my life completely changed. Then I believed and I viscerally experienced that there is something. Call it God, call it universe, call it life. I call it God, works for me. I'm not a religious person, but I felt that so strongly. I felt this ultimate safety anchor that told me during the ceremony, Mario, no matter what you do, no matter where you are, no matter how you feel, I love you either way. There's nothing you can do to make me not love you. And I felt this incredible amount of safety. And when you're feeling safe, you take bigger risks in life. And we all know where that leads you, to bigger opportunities. So go into nature, disconnect. Disconnect, be there. Initially, this will probably be, for some people, extremely uncomfortable.
Yes.
Because all of that stuff comes up. Breathe. Be with that. Feel it. The sadness will come up from what you haven't addressed 25 years ago with your dad. Let it come up. Let it wash over you. Feel it.
Let it go away.
Scream.
Yep.
And as you do that, it will move away. But the problem is, people think, if I allow myself to feel this right now, this anger, this frustration, this sadness, the guilt, it will swallow me whole and is going to destroy my life. The opposite is destroying your life. The suppression, the holding on, not talking about it. That's where you liberate yourself. So to your point, you know, silence is key. Sleep, never underestimate the power of sleep. Because what we want to do as conscious leaders and conscious entrepreneurs is we want a quality-driven life. We want leverage. We want to look at our lives and say, what is the one action I can take today that's going to yield 10 new clients? Not, do I need to send 500 or 1,000 cold emails or, you know, whatever that. No. What's the one thing I need to do? Oh, okay. My leverage action, I need to be on stage. I need to get to a TEDx. How do I get to a TEDx? Okay. I need to network with more people. How do I network with higher net worth people? Oh, I need to show up more powerfully. I need to ask for referrals. You see, this is my thinking process. That's how I got to all these opportunities. But think quality. Think one or two actions. For women, I love this experiment for women, because for women, it's so real. Say you're a female entrepreneur and you work Monday, Friday, or Monday, Saturday. You work all day long, right? You hustle. All of a sudden, you become pregnant. You have a child. your entire life changes. You can't work 10 hours a day anymore. Maybe you can do 2 or 3. But if you had to create the same outcome or better, what would you do? And you ask these questions and everything starts to change. You say, oh, I need to build a personal brand. How do I build a personal brand? Start a podcast. Oh, okay. How do I do that? Oh, I could partner with somebody that already is experienced at that, right? So you find the shortcuts, and that's how we then, you know, help. That's how I help people find the shortcuts and achieve what takes only years in 6 months or less. That's how I help them make way more money in less time, because you become a powerful leader. You become smart in your work. You become quality orientated. That's really what changes the game for most people, I find.
So it's, I'm just thinking, you know, because there were so many different points. So I always say it's something, I think it's from Christianity, says, let go, let God. Now I call it God.
Yes.
Some people call it Krishna. Some people call it Atman. Do you know there's over 100 names for God in the world? Who cares?
Crazy.
And so right. It's universal mind or God, as I call them, the spirits and the angels. And these are things that I do all the time for myself. So I always pray, which is asking for help. But you got to be meditative. You got to have that quiet time. You got to have that sleep to be able to resolve things. And what you were talking about is so true. You don't have to work. People have this false idea that if I'm working and to become successful, whether it's money or whatever you want in your life, I got to work 80 hours a week. No, that's not true at all. That's ridiculous. The more you work, the more you burn yourself out. And there's an old saying called health for wealth or wealth for health. So yeah, you become wealthy, but then your health is gone. So you got to spend all that money on the getting healthy again. And then you got to start the, it's like dog chasing the tail all the time. Catches the tail, is exhausted, gets down, gets his wind back, starts it all over again. And there is a universal mind. There is something and I'm not saying it's religious. I say it's spiritual, because there is something. There's all sorts of different philosophies and belief systems. There's hundreds, if not thousands of them out there. And I've examined many of them, and it's shamanic, Lao Tzu from Tao Te Ching. There's all sorts of them. And you take little bits and pieces and you pick things out and you go, that's real for me. Oh, that works for me. And you mark it down and you live it. And there's so many different things. The assumptions that we have about the world and success, whatever that definition of success is usually wrong. Because we have it based on somebody else's reality and somebody else's way of what they have to say. Well, I worked, you know, because I worked 80 hours a week, that's why I'm successful. You have been divorced 3 times, you've lost your house 12 times, and you're really worth nothing. What's my favorite? I'm worth $1 million. Well, I had a friend many years ago, happened to be from Italy. His name was Art, been gone for a long time. And he dressed in plain clothes. And he said, hey, Philip, yeah. That was my bad Italian accent. So just imagine the Italian accent. He said,
Filippo,
let's go buy a car. I go, buy a car. He goes, okay, this is a long time ago. So the car was like 20 grand. And he said, I'll come back and buy it. And the salesman looked at him like, yeah, right. He went and got $20,000 in cash. And the reason why he did that is he went to the bank. And this is over 25 years ago. And he went in there. He said, this is how you know you're rich. And he showed me his bank account. He had $150,000 in the account. He goes, I'm rich there. I have cash that I get. And when somebody tells you they're worth something, how much money do they, how much liquid do they have? How much peace do they have? He would say, you can't buy peace. You can't buy peace of mind. Because if you don't have that, you can't sleep. You know, we're talking about silence and sleep. If you can't sleep, you're not going to have silence. So you got to have silence to have sleep. And it's like, again, dog chasing the tail. You've got, people are so, as my grandma used to say, so scared of the silence, because they're like, what? And I'm not talking about music either. I love music, but don't anything, nothing. Just sit there by yourself. We have in our family room, I turn the lights down low, go in a place that you know is solemn for you. That means something. Dr. Wayne Dyer used to talk about that. Go in a place that means something for you. Something that draws energy for you. Something that gives you peace of mind. And once you're there, you start hearing things. And when you're in silence, you'd be surprised when you start just acknowledging. There's something else I read about yoga. There's one instructor I talked to, and he said, if you try to not think, and you think that's what yoga is and meditation, you're just going to get a giant headache. That's not what it's about. Let that noise happen. Don't be afraid about it. Like I said, If something brings up sadness, cry. Who cares?
Exactly.
You can't get past that stuff unless you acknowledge it happening. Now, if you talk about negativity all the time, your life is negativity. We're magnets. We understand that. But if there's something negative, and everybody has it, except for you and I, of course, that the negativity that guides us. And like I said, I'll stop. And I did something. We bought a new microwave and an egg burst in the new microwave. And I started getting mad. Then my wife came downstairs. And then I started, and I'm just getting all aggravated. I'm yelling. I'm like saying, and it's all about me. And I'm all, oh, this is not new anymore and all this. She looks, she goes, are you done? I said, and I looked at her, and this is the first time I started saying this. I go, you know, I don't like this version of myself. She goes, what? I go, I don't like this version of myself because that's a version that doesn't exist anymore. It's there. You can't stop those things from reoccurring in your central nervous system and having those feelings. You know, think of the most depressing time in your life, and the whole thing acts like it just happened yesterday. So you can't get rid of that, because people are like, oh, well, I want to get rid of those bad thoughts. Well, when you're dead, those bad thoughts will be gone. But other than that, it's not going to go away. And when I started doing that, I started getting one time after that, something else happened. Now I don't remember what it was. I said, I'm mad at myself for being mad at myself for the version that I don't like. And I repeated it like three times. She goes, stop. You're upset that you're upset that you're upset about being upset. I'm like, and I was like, I was in that wagon, you know, dog chasing the tail again. But I realized that when you have those tools and you use them and you become so aware what you're doing to yourself, and then you pull back and go, just say something to yourself. I'll say something right now. For me, in my world, my relationships, my family, friends, I will say I'm sorry. And sometimes I go, well, you don't have to be sorry. I go, no, you understand. I'm saying I'm sorry because it relieves me of feeling guilt because I was being a moron. And I said something stupid or whatever the action or the words were. And they said, oh, I never thought of it that way. I said, yeah, because I'm releasing it. I'm not letting it. Because like you said, if you don't face up to that, it's less like a day or so. But if you don't, what used to happen is you bottle it up and it stayed there for months, or it never even came out and just sat there. And that could be holding you back. That one thing could be holding you back from your success. That one thing, a bad relationship, a bad job, a bad this, a bad that, oh, whatever it is. And I just love that idea of you know, you've got to have that silence. You've got to have that peace and quiet. You die. I listen to this shamanic music that I listen to in the evening. And I'm a music composer. I don't want to listen to my stuff. No, because that's my stuff in my mind. I want to listen to somebody else that inspires me. Because I don't get inspired by me. I get inspired by everybody else. And I listen to this over. And oh, you're talking about listening to this stuff? I'll lay down on the couch at the end of the evening and I'll listen to the audiobooks, the tapes and all that stuff over. Les Brown, Bob Proctor, Alan Watts, oh, you name it. I'm listening to it over. And then I fall asleep. And what happens is this stuff gets planted into your brain over and over. I can't get enough of it. I can't know. When I go on vacation, I was like, I take the opportunity to even delve more into it. Because I want to come back from vacation a better person. I want to come back strong. I'm not leaving for vacation to get away from circumstances that aren't working. I want to come back a better person. So, okay. Could you go through, you got a lot of cool stuff on your website, but I saw abundance, wealth, love, health, and meaning. That philosophy. I know we're talking about a lot of stuff, but can you kind of, you know, delve into that abundance, wealth, love, health, and meaning, and how that whole synchronicity, how that works together in that circle, the circle of light, they say from that one movie from Disney.
So the one word that really ties all of it together is abundance, right? And I find most people, again, don't really truly understand what abundance means, because often you see words are thrown around in like a book, and then you see, oh, abundance is, you know, I am enough, there is enough, you know, yeah. But if you believe in abundance, you really believe in that, abundance is the way that God looks at life. That's really what it comes down to. Abundance is the mindset of God. In abundance, there are no mistakes. Nothing's wrong. There's no negativity. It doesn't exist. See, in the view that God has, there's nothing wrong. When you take on that mindset, what happens is you truly align yourself with the flow of life. all the time. Because, and this is what I picked up with you, Philip, as well, is the next time you do get angry, that's okay. See, if you get angry, accept the fact that you get angry. And when you can accept the fact that you get angry, guess what? The anger subsides. See, the more acceptance you have for whatever you are experiencing at any given moment means you are in the present. Because acceptance, the way that I look at acceptance is the acknowledgement of the present moment. And sometimes the present moment in your perception is horrifying, is terrible, is overwhelming, and you know, it's all of that stuff. But if you can accept that that's the way that it is occurring to you right now in this moment, guess what? You stop fighting it. You stop fighting the fact that you are jealous of your best friend's husband. That you would no longer deny and fight the fact that you tell yourself that you are behind on your goals and builds. And when you stop doing that, you stop investing energy into these patterns, which means overall, the more acceptance you have, the more you start having peace. And guess what? The more peace you have in your life, the more abundant your life will be. The more your life will flow, the more opportunities you have, the stronger you become. If you think about the strongest people in the world, physically and mentally, who comes to mind?
Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know.
Perfect response. Perfect response. And if we really look at it, it's the opposite. It's monks. Monks are the strongest people in the world. They perform the unthinkable. They perform things that people, they like do a handstand on their pinky finger on the top of a needle. Right? And they do things that people go like, what? Is this out of a Marvel movie? Why? They're not like bulked up like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but they could easily outperform it. Why? Because their mind, body, and spirit is in alignment. They have inner peace. They live in acceptance of the present moment, whatever that present moment looks like. So abundance is really, I am enough and there is enough. Right? That's the kind of mindset. And it looks at the whole world as a holistic system. It looks at yourself as a holistic system. There's no idea that you are broken, that you need to be fixed, that there's something wrong. It doesn't exist. See, if that's why therapy, and I'm going to lean myself out there, is a band-aid, but not a transformational healing tool. Therapy can help. It's like taking an aspirin, right? It helps, removes the pain for a bit, but the pain will come back. It will always come back. Why? Because behavioral therapy is based on the model that there's something wrong with you. You have some anxiety. There's no such thing as anxiety. It doesn't exist. It's a sensation in your body that's usually in your chest that feels a certain way. And then there's a bunch of people, mostly like, I don't know how long ago, but mostly some white man in a white coat sitting around a table and saying, yeah, this thing that we feel, what do you call this? Anxiety. Okay. Oh, I like anxiety. Sir, what do you think about that? Yes, I like that too. And anxiety once, twice, three times. Okay. Anxiety is $1 trillion industry has been born.
Yep.
Everybody has anxiety. Everybody suffers from anxiety. No, you don't. You do not. But now you make it part of your identity. Right. So the abundance mindset doesn't look at that. The abundance mindset looks, you are the way you are, and the way you are is the way you are. And that's it. There's nothing wrong with that, right? I am the way that I am because that's the way that I am. I choose what I choose because that's what I choose. See, there's no story attached to it. There's no justification attached to it. There is just the isness of life. That's true abundance. And when you adopt that kind of mentality and that kind of behavior, guess what? Wealth becomes second nature because now you'll go out into the world and you say, I want to become a coach. Okay, I'll do it. Great. I'll do it, right? I'll take the actions to become a coach. I go to the courses. I read the books. I talk to other coaches. I start coaching people. I start marketing myself. I start asking more people and talking about it. Great. Very simple process. Not difficult at all. It's super simple. But your mind gets in the way. After the first time you ask people, hey, can I coach you? And you hear no. That's, yeah, see, I was right. My mom was right of never amounting to anything in my life. Of course not. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, and And then you get onto a podcast with Philip, and then you say something, and then you blank, and you're like, shit, I had that one story prepared that was so juicy. Oh, God, I'm so stupid. That happens in your mind.
Yeah.
Instead, you can say, oh, I forgot it. Okay. I accept the fact that I forgot it. Yeah, does it feel weird? But I accept it. See, there's no more resistance. And you remove the resistance, which means now your energy is way higher, because the thing that drains your batteries more than anything else is resistance. See, have you ever gone to a family meeting and you feel really good and you come in, right? And then 2 hours later you leave and you feel exhausted. You're drained. I mean, you're like, I need two weeks of sleep. Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah. See? But you're not exhausted because of them.
No, it's you. You're
exhausted because you are not authentic, because you're holding everything in. Because they said somebody, oh, Philip, so that podcast thing that you're doing, what is that? Don't you have to be an accredited radio show host to be doing that? Aren't you doing some stuff that you're not supposed to be doing? See, you're saying, no, grandma, you know, it's fine. You don't really understand this, you know, don't worry about it. No, but on the internet, you're like, you fucking bitch. I hope a bus runs you over and then goes backwards and forwards. And that's what you do on the inside. But you're just like, oh, it's okay, grandma. You don't say anything.
So yeah.
All of your energy is invested in holding it together.
Right.
Stop holding it together.
Yeah.
Let it out. You don't have to punch your grandma in the face, but tell her, say, grandma, I'm hurt. That feels hurt. That feels hurt, man. It's like, yes, it's my stuff. I own it. I feel hurt because I'm insecure, but it doesn't help that my old grandma is saying that to me. He's like, could you mind stopping, not saying that to me because it really hurts? If you do that, I promise you, you're going to have way more energy. So with that level of acceptance and that energy you have, guess what? Guess what? Health will skyrocket. Your relationships will improve. And for the first time in your life, I want to say it again, for the first time in your life, you will experience true love. Because true love, somebody, a brilliant coach told me this, because my understanding of love was just two things, Hollywood and Disney, and it's probably the same thing, right? He said to me, Mario, true love is accepting someone exactly as they are and exactly as they aren't.
Right.
Because that's what God does.
Yes.
God will look at you and say, Philip, I love you just the way you are.
You're perfect.
You are perfect just the way you are. And that's love. But for human beings, it's extremely difficult to access because the egoic mind gets in the way and says, no, but I shouldn't be this way. I shouldn't be angry. I shouldn't be doubting myself. I shouldn't be frustrated and blah, blah, blah. I shouldn't be struggling to make more money. Yeah, but you are. No, but I shouldn't. But you are, and that's okay. Yeah, you're right. It's okay. I mean, I'm a human being. I go through these phases, you know, just like winter takes place and then autumn and spring and summer. It's part of the flow of life, just like the ebb and flow of the oceans.
Right.
You are part of the nature.
Right.
So the more you can accept that, the more you can morph into this abundant view of the world and yourself, the more effortless you walk through life, the more opportunities are going to come your way, the better you feel, the healthier you are going to be. I had a slipped disc with debilitating back pain for 1.5 years at 21 years old. I went to 5 different doctors. I was on pain meds every day. It was excruciating. It was so bad. The final doctor, one of the best doctors in Germany, like he's written books and all that fun stuff, he put me in the MRI scanner. He said, Mario, when are you available for surgery? We need to cut open your back. This is really bad. If you don't do the surgery, you're going to have severe issues for the rest of your life. I said, bro, I'm 21. I'm not going to let you cut open my back. Hell no. Like, I don't trust you anymore. Screw you. So then I started to research the effect of the mind of the body. And guess what I found? Guilt and shame causes back pain, especially lower pain, because you're carrying the load. And so I released so much shame and guilt. I never had any invasive procedure in my life done on me. And guess what? Today, I am pain-free and I have been for many, many, many years, and I do whatever I want in my life. I rarely, if ever, go to see a doctor. I don't have anything, you know? Many of my peers start to have cancer. The skin starts to look terrible. They look 20 years older. They are overweight. They're obese. They're unhappy, you know? I'm not a special person. I'm not. I just follow the natural principles of life. Anybody can do this. Anybody can do this. And it's so damn simple. It's not easy, but it's so damn simple.
And you just hit on it. What? It's not easy, but it's simple. It takes a lot of commitment and dedication. And I suffered from different things in my life, like a lot of people do, stomach aches, headaches, whatever it is. And now when I have like what I call an allergy reaction, I'm like, I question everything now. Why is my nose running? Why is my eye itching? Why is there a little red mark over here? Why is my back hurting me? And you know, my wife and I, we swim, we go to acupuncture, we go to chiropractors. I mean, we do all the stuff and massage, you know, deep tissue massage, but that doesn't cure anything. That's what works for us. But the mind is telling the body what to do. So I'm always going, oh, why didn't I sleep well? Why am I waking up in a bad mood? Why am I doing it? Because every time when I wake up in the morning, so I pray and meditate three times a day. When I pray, I ask for help. I don't say anything necessarily. And I say, you know, okay, got my eyes closed in the morning. And before I even open them, I say, thank you, God, that I woke up this morning. But I won't open my eyes until I actually mean it. I don't want to say it just like, yeah, you know, what the heck. Then I open my eyes and I look, I'm like, oh, there's a light. There's a fan around the light in my bedroom here. And I, oh, thank you for the covers. Thank you for the floor. I go and brush my teeth. I'm thanking God for the toothpaste. I'm thanking God for the towel that I'm taking a shower with. Thank God for the clean water. Because you and I both know, just most countries in the world still don't have clean water, which is totally unacceptable to me. But that's a whole other thing. But that's human beings. That goes back to the ego. That goes back to power. That goes back, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make all the money and I'm going to keep you poor. And it's not changed. But I'm like, I thank God. And everything that I do all day long, and when something goes wrong or something I feel bad, or it's mostly just feeling bad about myself for some stupid reason, some made up thing. I'm like, why did I feel that? Why did I think that? Why am I doing that? And when I started doing this, and I share everything with my wife, and she's like, she's starting to do it. She's starting to come back, goes, okay, I don't like that version of you. It's like, and then, or she starts throwing the philosophy back at me, and I'm like, well, that's not very nice. don't throw it back in my face. She goes, well, you
don't
can't
give me my medicine.
That's right. Do as I say, not as I do. And, you know, I'm more on, this is newer for me. And this has been going on for, well, I started about 7 years ago, not with this, but in a different part of it, because I left a company, was going out of business, and I was there for a long time, blah, blah, blah. I thought I'd retire there. But it took a long time for me to get to where I'm at now. I didn't know I'd be talking to you in a podcast. I didn't even know I had a philosophy. I wrote a musical that came out of the philosophy. I've got all sorts of different things that are coming out of this thing that God is throwing into me, because we're just empty shells. If we realize that we have no original ideas, and that this, I call them the spirits and the angels, are telling us what to do, and they're tapping us on the shoulder, and I get really into the nth degree of this whole thing. Maybe it's the engineer in me, that they tap me on your predominant shoulder. I'm right-handed, and I feel these things. So when I hear creaks in the wood, or I get more inspiration waking up in the middle of the night than I do during the day. And I feel things. You know, I know people in the audience can say, oh yeah, I felt something in the middle of the night. It's a ghost or something. I believe it's a spirit. I believe it's an angel. And when you feel that there's somebody in the room, it's not scary. It's not Poltergeist the movie. It's something that's telling you there's something to get out of it. Why did I wake up? Why did I come out of that? Why am I dreaming that way? Oh, that's a weird dream. What did it really mean? You know, I can't tell you how many things I've waken up in the middle of the night and I mark something, go to another room, mark it down, and go back to sleep. Sometimes I look at it the next day going, that doesn't make a lick of sense. But more than often, it does. And it changes my entire life. It then transforms all these different experiences. And so I get more inspiration. We're talking about sleeping, you know, and there's so many different ways, whether you call it prayer, whether you call it meditation, whether you call it silence, whether you call it shaman, whether you call it like Lao Tzu from Tao Te Ching. He mentions a lot of things about water. You're talking about water. And if we go in the flow of the water, everything's fine. We go against the water, it kicks us back. And just like things in our minds, like you were saying, you know, if I keep doing it, I'm not going to deal with this. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to leave it for later. No, that's not good. Because what happens if you just confronted that and solved that issue? You had a resolution and suddenly your whole life changed. It opens up opportunities. You could be holding yourself back by something, one thing that you didn't even know. And we're talking about Les Brown. You know, we're picking on him, but we read a lot. I'm sure we all read a lot of different things and see a lot of things. But one of the things he said in one of his talks was he didn't realize that he was breaking up relationships because he felt that if The mother that I didn't know could leave me in an empty building and not love me. How can this person love me? And he started getting, he got divorced. He broke up relationships. And I think what I was watching was maybe from like 2015 or something. Because you never stop learning. He said, suddenly I realized that my whole life opened up. It's like if that person that I didn't know who left me in that building with my twin brother didn't know, if they can't love me. You were talking about the things that are inside of you. You don't even know. And he was no youngster when he came. I think when he did this talk, he was like 60-something years old, he said. He didn't know that. So now he's growing. He's changing. And he's doing different things in his relationships. So there's all these silent bad stuff or silent, I don't know what word to use, but silent negative stuff that's in our minds that we don't know. And when it comes up, and if grandma says something, you don't have to go, grandma, you're a real effing asshole. You're not. You can come out with it in a nice way. She might not even know that she's doing it in a mean way or unintentionally doing it. Right. So you're just like, well, grandma, da-da-da-da. Oh, I didn't know that. And people just don't. And another thing that came up when you were talking, because you're already at where you're at now. I'm starting. This is fairly new. And I've got two people I'm talking to this Saturday. I am so excited about this. I can come out of my skin. Because to me, I think I mentioned this earlier. I don't know if it was on the podcast or before we hit the record button. Everything's growing exponentially. Exponentially doesn't mean from 1 to 1,000. It means from 1 to 2, 2 to 3. And you know that whole thing, math, right? You know, you get 2 people, you get 20. You get 20, you get 40. And these people are telling me, and some other people that are interested, said, I'm telling all my family and friends, we want to hear you do more live lectures. We want to hear more into this, but we want to do this. I'm like, really? And it's uncomfortable because this is all new. I'm like, somebody really wants to listen? Somebody's going to get something out of this? And the more it happens, because you don't, I believe God sets you these things. They sent you these things. They sent that we were talking together. And we were talking about podcasts. I started out slow, and now I got a lot in the bank, more than what I have online. But it took a while. Now it's slowing down. Why? Because I'm looking for quality, not quantity. I'm looking for opportunities and conversations. I'm not looking for I just want somebody to talk to. I mean, we've been talking for probably close to, when did we start? 11:30? We're talking for almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, when we started the conversation, he's like, no, just keep talking. I hate those 20-minute conversations. Because we're talking about something people are going to see something in themselves. Yeah. That's the whole idea of conscious communication. Sharing things to empower others, empower ourselves, and keep going. And just, it's amazing. And Mario, I appreciate you just coming. I can't thank you enough for this wonderful conversation and wonderful enlightenment. We definitely have to talk again on something else that we could probably fill up another hour and a half with just on one topic. So I want to thank you again for being on the show today. I much appreciate it.
Yeah.
Now,
thank you.
You're welcome. And to my conscious community, remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.